This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the Scotty Flamingo to my Johnny Polo, Tim Capel. How you doing, Tim?
Ooh, I like it. I like it. Mm-hmm. We're getting the three faces of Scotty Levy, I guess, perhaps tonight, because the subject of tonight's edition of Talkin' WCW is this man, Raven, a.k.a. our man in the third seat, Greg Phillips. And this was your choice, Greg.
Yet another example, thumbing through the literature of life and life throwing another lemon at me. So it is written, so it shall come to pass.
Raven has joined the Rosebuds, I feel like.
That was a god-awful version of Raven's gimmick, but whatever the hell.
You know, they can't all be winners. I mean,
No.
Week after week, it's...
Poetry's hard, old. Yeah.
Poetry's really hard, unless it's the big boss man writing it, but that's another story for another time. Yes, I'm happy to be here. I selected the man of the hour for this podcast, Raven, one of my favorite characters from the whatever you want to call the late 90s in wrestling, the Attitude Era, the Nitro Era, whatever you want to call it. One of my favorite characters in all of wrestling from that time was Raven. And as somebody that didn't have an opportunity to watch ECW until they got on TNN, my only exposure to Raven was in the wrestling magazines and, of course, his time as the aforementioned Scotty Flamingo and Johnny Polo. But when he showed up in WCW, from reading in those wrestling magazines, I knew that this was a character that appealed to me, looked cool, different. And so I was like, I have got to talk about this man with my cohorts on Talking WCW.
No doubt. Yeah. I'm glad you did. Go ahead, Jenny.
No, I was just going to say, like, I'm excited about this guy because I know him mostly from an entirely different promotion. So, just, like, really excited to see what he does in the WCW.
Yeah, and I can tell you, he's sort of instrumental in reigniting my passion for wrestling in the late 90s. Just as a character, was so good at doing what he did, was so good at being that smarmy, shitty, like, true heel. Like, you take away some of the characters who are cool heels, so you didn't mind cheering for. Like, I definitely had a lot of friends who were into wrestling at the time in 1998 who were like big NWO guys because they were cool heels. It was cool to cheer for them. And Raven was so not that, just more of a traditional heel who you hated. You wanted to see him get his ass beat. And being sort of the marquee, markish returning fan, lapsed fan, whatever you want to call it, that I was, that really got to me, and responded pretty intensely to two of the feuds that we're going to be spotlighting here tonight. I will go ahead and say all of our match choices are from the year 1998. That just accidentally happens sometimes with these episodes. We didn't plan it.
In our defense, we really only had 2 years to choose from because in 97, yeah. Raven's, I believe, only in-ring action was against Stevie Richards, maybe, and a couple of like matches against Scotty Riggs and a few guys that would later join the flock. So that really didn't have much of a chance to make it. And then 99, he was in the tag team ranks for that year. So, you know, I thought about, full disclosure, I thought about picking a few of those tag matches from that year, but ended up wanting to focus on a singles run this time around. And his 1998 is probably the best year of his wrestling career. I mean, obviously he dominated ECW for quite some time, but the exposure of Nitro in 98 was so widespread. He really, truly was one of the biggest stars in wrestling at a time when wrestling was at its hottest. For 1 year, he burned out bright and then he faded away, unfortunately. But it was a character that, you know, if you hung around goth kids like me, like I did, no, I wasn't a goth kid, but I hung around a bunch of goth kids and hung around a bunch of mopey, depressed kids. They loved Raven.
I am really into the concept of Alabama goths. So,
oh, they, it was a thing.
1998 Alabama goths.
Yes,
so much.
It was a thing. It was a thing. Trench coat.
It was. I can attest to that.
Oh my God, I love it.
I'm more obsessed with the idea of goth Greg.
No, I was no goth. I was no goth. I hung around whoever would befriend me at the time, which weren't many people. So the outcasts and the loners, the dregs of society, the types that would join the flock, those were the people I hung out with primarily. So
they did tend to be kind of the nicer kids, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, not so
very
like, with a
accepting of others. Yes.
One of my friends kind of looked like a dead ringer for Billy Kidman at the time.
There you go.
So it was, you know, we liked the flock, but to your point, Tim, Raven was such a great heel because he was a cult leader that was completely disingenuous, in that he would make other people do his fighting for him and would basically use them for his own personal gain. And the beauty of his character arc is when he first shows up, you just think he's a cult leader. And he is kind of a badass because he beats these guys in the ring and then makes them become his servants or whatever and takes over their lives. But then as 1998 unfolds, and in particular in one of these feuds we'll talk about, you really see the layers unwrap around Raven and you realize that it's a facade, that he's basically using people for his own personal gain. So a great character, nuanced character. He was cutting some of the best promos in the business at that time, at a time when they were amazing promos across the board in wrestling. And yeah, so great performer, Scott Levy, very brilliant, ahead of his time in a lot of ways, limited, got over whatever physical limitations he had with his incredible mind for wrestling, as we'll talk about during the course of the episode.
Tim, do you feel that the homoeroticism of the flock is what drew you to Raven?
You know, I can't say I detected any homoeroticism at the time. Maybe that's what the staying power is, though. For me today as an adult, I don't know.
I mean, it looks very...
Back then, you're sort of hypersensitive about all that stuff. So you kind of go into defense mode anytime somebody suggests, oh, wrestling's so gay, right?
Right.
Which it is. but
super is.
But when you're 14 years old and not wanting to confront a lot of those things, you maybe don't go there. Mm-hmm. You know, socially or
maybe
personally, mentally, maybe subconsciously.
Well, also you have to remember that 1998 was a different fashion time in our country too. On the other program, it wasn't too long from this that you would see the Hardy Boys come along with their unique stylings of dress. Shall we say?
The tits cut out of the mesh shirt.
They had all kinds of things. Hey, listen, Van Hammer can dress however he wants to dress.
Yeah.
And you know he had to live his life. And Lodi, my boy Lodi,
coming out
with his signs. I mean, his signs were not very clever. In the matches that we watched. Maybe they were never clever. I remember them being clever, but perhaps they never were.
There were some clever ones, I think, in my match.
I think week to week he had some decent ones. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was a sick boy, Scott Vick, who literally all he did was springboard. He would like springboard
into
a handshake.
Killed his sister. I mean, this is what happens to a man after.
Oh my God! That was supposed to be a thing, wasn't it? Yeah. That was the rumor at the time.
a monster is responsible for her vehicular homicide, which is a word that everyone uses.
Yes.
Yeah. So it that's one of those, like, the pieces don't quite connect until years later, but it makes all the sense in the world.
All the sense in the world. Right. And that explains why he was indeed a sick boy.
Mm-hmm.
It turned him into that. Really? Yet the aforementioned Riggs, who I don't want to knock the guy in case he listens to the podcast, but I will just go make my joke. I'll make my joke and move out of the way. Riggs, who appropriately enough is the most boring member of the flock.
He kind of has to be, right? Because he was the member of the flock who had the closest thing to a proper feud with Raven before he joined. Wasn't there a good bit of back and forth? And by that, I mean about 2 weeks of...
Right. Raven gave him the drop toe hold on the steel chair, and it put his eye out, and he had to start wearing an eye patch.
Yes. Hot. Well, half.
So, and then he ends up joining, which, you know, this is how you accumulate cult members, I guess. Members.
Bray Wyatt should have taken notes from this, by the way.
Clearly. I remember Raven debuting with a lot of...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember, but because I wasn't watching at the time, I should walk that back. I don't remember, but
I've heard people say that they remember.
Yeah, no. And actually watching those 97 Nitros, which I did a few years back, it was just like, you know, it was really hot streak that they were having that summer. I mean, both promotions, both companies, if you will, having really hot summers in the late 90s there. And Raven comes in like towards the end of July, and they were sort of almost teasing that he might be the mystery partner of DDP.
Mm-hmm.
Going into his match with against Savage and Hall at what was it? Probably Bash at the Beach.
Bash at the Beach, maybe. No, it's
gonna be DDP and a mystery partner. It ended up being Henning, of course, who debuted was it the same night?
I think so. Because if I remember, that Clash of Champions, mm-hmm. where Raven's in the audience with Stevie Richards. And it's the same night that we see, I think the same night that Kurt Hennig debuted. I could be.
Yeah. And so you get all this intrigue around that. And of course he wasn't the mystery partner, but it was like, okay, this is Raven. That's how they brought him in, which felt like already by association, he's getting the rub from a pretty big angle. And you know, he goes on to build the flock from there, and making these appearances in the front row and making various demands, refusing to wrestle, having that weird little deal with Stevie Richards, who was not around for very long. I never understood exactly.
I didn't either. Dancing Stevie Richards. Did he get injured maybe or something around that time? I'm not sure.
I don't know. But I know he went back to ECW real quick. So, but yeah, you're right. We didn't see him wrestle for a good little while there in 97. And what we did get of it was, yeah, just sort of building the flock. But we do kind of cap off the year in 1997 with a pretty cool mid-card feud. Started up like November, December time frame with, a problematic individual, Chris Benoit.
What did he really do?
I mean, we've had him on, we featured him on the show before. I can't imagine we'll ever do a dedicated episode, but we don't have like a Benoit
Jenny.
Okay, I can't say I'll ever choose him.
I won't. Yeah, I won't.
Go for it. You know what? Go for it.
I like to live dangerously.
You do.
Ollie dangerously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all I know is that in 1997, 1998, as a returning fan, Chris Benoit was sort of the 1 and 1A between him and DDP, who my then new favorite wrestlers were. So, yeah, this feud was pretty formative. Like, that sucked me right back in. And that's going to bring us to our first match. chosen by you, Greg. So why don't you handle the introductions?
Yes. So appropriately enough, the very feud that you're referring to was one of my favorites, and it was a great way, I thought, to. I already liked Raven because I thought he was an interesting looking individual, an interesting character, and all that. But it really opened up an incredible feud to me, because Benoit was already one of my favorite wrestlers. Like, he was top five favorite wrestler for me at that point in 97, 98. And the fact that two guys that I really enjoyed watching were feuding with each other was awesome. And it was one of those feuds where they did a great job with delayed gratification, because you didn't get to see them interact, really, in the ring. They were supposed to wrestle, if you recall, at Starrcade 97.
I was so mad that match didn't
happen. And Raven backed out, and Saturn wrestled Benoit. What ended up being a pretty good match. But nonetheless, finally, that brings us to January 24th, 1998, in the legendary Hera Arena in Trotwood, Ohio.
Hera Arena.
Sold out 1998 is the pay-per-view event, branded as WCW NWO Sold Out. And this would be the time when Chris Benoit would finally get his hands on Raven in a Raven's Rules match. Because as we all know, Raven only wrestles under Raven's Rules. Mm-hmm. Or, as Jim Ross would say, Raven's Reels.
Do you think that's a great failing, one of the many failings of the WCW executive committee, how they just they basically just roll over and give this guy everything? Why are they?
I mean, they treated him and his negotiations like it was Hulk Hogan coming over in 94 or something.
Right? I don't know. I kind of like it. You know, I didn't know that every one of his matches was like that.
Yeah. He drove a hard bargain when he signed with WCW. He drove a very hard bargain.
Why not?
You know, it explains so much about that 1998 Hollywood Hogan contract, which is just the gold standard in contract porn.
And here's the question. What was the power structure like? Because you have J.J. Dillon, as the commissioner of WCW at that time, chairman of the executive committee.
I think he was the chairman of the WCW executive committee.
And then you had the WCW executive committee. And then you had Roddy Piper, who was the independent counsel. Mm-hmm. Who was making decisions unilaterally. This committee was just destined to fail. Too many people, stepping on each other's toes, too many conflicts of interest. And as a result, you get a contract like this where a man just gets to make his rules as he goes along. Because no one ever knew what Raven's rules were. It would be whatever he wanted them to be.
That's which awesome.
I agree. It was awesome at the time. But it was very clever and heelish, and you have Raven, and he sits in the. I love the way that everything about this character, you would never have been able, if you hadn't read it in a wrestling magazine, you never would have guessed that this was Johnny Polo or Scotty Flamingo. He completely inhabits this character. The way he enters the ring and slumps down in the corner, every kid imitated that when we were doing our playground wrestling matches and stuff. Which, I wasn't doing, of course, at age 14. What am I, a crazy man?
Perishable.
Then the awesome theme music, WCW theme music of Chris Benoit plays, and out comes the Canadian Crippler, who gets quite the ovation from the Trotwood, Ohio crowd.
Yeah, they're into him.
and a lithe Benoit comes out to the ring and he and Raven commence to tearing into each other. And Raven really dominates the early going of this bout, getting a lot of offense on Benoit. Jumps him from behind and beats him up and, puts the boots to him. But then Chris Benoit does get his comeback. And once he makes his comeback, it's quite another story in this match. As Benoit gets to chopping, as one might say, and he chops a figurative hole through the chest of poor Raven. At one point, Benoit rips Raven's shirt off just to give him better access to the chops.
Yes.
It is a brutal beating. Steel chairs get involved, steps get involved, guardrails. Raven, of course, was a big fan of the chair. He used that drop toe hold spot to perfection. Here he does a bulldog onto it and falls victim to his own drop toe hold onto the chair, hoisted by his own petard or whatever the expression is. And you get at one point you get the incredible visual and yet the horrifying and frightening and now in 2021 off-putting visual of Chris Benoit diving off the top rope and headbutting the chair onto Raven's face, rendering them both obsolete. And then Raven counters Chris Benoit's attempts at a Northern Lights suplex into the Even Flow DDT. And this was, I thought, one of the stranger spots in the match. He hits him with the Even Flow, and then Benoit recovers first and makes the cover on Raven, which I thought was an interesting bit that maybe was selling the danger of the headbutt spot earlier. And then they wrestle a little bit more, grapple a little bit more, and Raven goes for a suplex, countered by Benoit into the Crippler crossface. At that time, a fairly new submission. He'd only been doing it for about a year, but it was over and it was established. People knew it was the end. And then the match ends with a great bit of psychology as Raven starts laughing as he is passing out to the Crippler crossface. The announcers are flipping out about this guy's laughing at the pain. This guy's a nutcase. You know, he's insane. Perfect for his gimmick. Chris Benoit gets the W. We have some aftermatch shenanigans as well, but it was a really good match and a physical violent match for a feud that had been built up for so long. It felt like Benoit won the feud, and yet it felt like there was still a little bit unsatisfying to him because Raven didn't tap. He just passed out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you felt like there's still maybe a little bit more to this story to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is, spoiler. That visual, though, of Raven just smiling as he goes out in the crossface, it's uncomfortable today. But it's one of those, if you can separate yourself from, you know, reality, it is a great pro wrestling image for certain. Kind of cool seeing post-match Dean Malenko go out there and sort of help Benoit clear out the flock, which, I mean, that didn't really go anywhere at the time, but would eventually pay off, would eventually amount to something, these two being allies and friends. Felt kind of random, I guess, at the time period, but I don't know. I guess they...
You get the I can't remember if it was Bobby or Dusty that says, get the flock out.
Yes, get the flock out. Well, Bobby also has a great line after the finished. He's calling the replay, which he always did. Says that Raven has never had a better Saturday night when he's going to sleep in that crossface. I've always liked that line.
And another great bit here that I didn't remember at all: Hammer, when he's pulling Raven out. And Raven's looks like he's essentially been crucified.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Another great bit of character work from Mr. Levy here.
Yes, he goes entirely limp as Hammer just carries him out. It's absolutely amazing. After smiling demonically during the fade out, that was awesome. Raven was just, I mean... He was really good in this, as good as Benoit was, in my opinion. And I sort of always pop for the Snickers logo on the mat. Which, I mean, like, you're having a match like this, and it's very intense, and you're, like, really into it, and then there's, like, a Snickers logo on the mat.
It's not even something, you know, kind of adult, like Coors Light or...
Right, yeah. It's hungry, like, give me Marlboro or something like randomly. I don't know.
You're not yourself when you're headbutting a steel chair.
It fits then. I'm into it. But it's like a low key, like a hardcore match, you know? Mm-hmm. Like with the expert use of the chair. I loved all the uses of the chair. It was really awesome. And then just devastating moves from both guys. Like, the Even Flow, the fucking suplex on the ramp on Raven by Benoit.
Oh, brutal.
I mean, it was balls to the wall. Like, this is a fantastic match. And I will never forget Raven's face as he is being choked out. I mean, it's haunting.
as far as like it pure in-ring goes, like Chris Benoit was probably the best wrestler in America at that point.
I mean,
he was a machine, and Raven kept up every bit of the way. Mm-hmm. And the rep for Raven is that he was big into like match layouts. He was meticulous in his match layouts, and he is masterful at knowing how to maximize crowd reactions, and you can see that in this match.
For sure.
And they just complement each other so well, too, with Raven as the character wanting, basically saying, give it to me. I'm going to eat everything that you dish out here. Mm-hmm. And Benoit being more than game for that, because that's just what he does. Just that rapid fire offense that he's known for. In fact, I believe there was at least part of a shoot interview that Scott Levy did, I don't know when, probably 10 years ago now, where he said sometimes it was hard to work with Benoit because he wanted to be able to sell the offense a lot more, but Benoit just never there'd never be a lull in that offense, like enough for him to actually stop and try to put it over. It would just be such an onslaught, just kept coming, and he would like deliberately try to slow Benoit down, try to slow the matches down. And I think he manages to here. I think there's a good balance of that in this match, but I can totally see what he's talking about, where he's like, hey, I know you want to get your shit in, and I'm happy to take it, but let me at least sell a little bit.
Mm-hmm. He's, nigh invulnerable when he's blasting, so
yeah,
that's right.
You gotta get your shit in while you can.
That's right.
Yeah,
I like this match a lot. I'm glad I picked
me too.
It.
And Jenny, you brought up a great point about the chair too. It's such a staple of wrestling, just a folding mm-hmm. chair, but they use it so creatively in this match. And Raven always did with the, you know, always doing that drop toe hold spot. It's great in this match. The turning point comes when Benoit reverses that drop toe hold, hits one of his own, turns the tables on Raven, and then he just takes over from there. But yeah, like the bulldog and just all the suplexes on the chair. Mileage out of it.
I feel like there are three sort of like innovators of steel chair use in wrestling, and all of them were in ECW. And that would be Raven, Sabu, and Rob Van Dam are the three that come to my mind whenever I think about the folding chair in wrestling as far as being used creatively.
Yeah.
And they use them in different ways. With Van Dam, it was athleticism. With Sabu, it was just insanity. And then with Raven, it was all of these clever ways to like set up simple spots, like a drop toe hold, and making that mean something in 1998 was a difficult thing to do, but he did it amazingly. Yeah.
Or even doing a snapmare across the chair. It's like such a basic elementary move, but I just love it. So yeah, tremendous match. I've always loved this one. Glad you picked it, Greg. And this feud, it does continue. So even though it's a big, big win for Benoit, huge catharsis for the crowd too. Like they so wanted to see Raven get his after being edged along so much in the end of 97 into the early goings of 98. So everybody was super behind Benoit in this victory. You would think that Benoit goes on to bigger, better things. In fact, challenges Diamond Dallas Page for the United States Heavyweight Championship. But turns out Raven is not quite done with them. And so he kind of continues feuding with Benoit, messes up a few of those attempted challenges, which leads to a triple threat match at Jenny, your favorite pay-per-view, that being Uncensored, but not 1995, 1998.
Aww. I know. The first pay-per-view that Greg Phillips ever attended for wrestling.
Hot?
Yeah, which is crazy to me. Where was that at?
Mobile, Alabama. Mobile, Alabama.
I've been there.
That's where I live.
It's a fun place to watch wrestling.
My buddy Kevin and myself and my parents went to Uncensored 98. I think it was my parents. Might have been his parents. I can't remember. Some parents, but I didn't care about them. I was there to see the wrestling. So
was Kevin a goth?
Yes, he was. At the time, he later became a good old boy in a shocking turn of events. But it was awesome. The show was great, and then just being there live to see all my favorite wrestlers, and guess whose T-shirt I bought at that show?
Raven,
you would be correct.
Boom.
I was hoping you would guess Lash LaRue, but he was not there yet.
That was my second guess.
Yeah. Disco Inferno.
I bought a Sting shirt and I bought a Raven shirt, and those were my two that I got.
Yeah, and that I remember that match, Raven versus Benoit versus DDP, was like, it felt like the first sort of mainstream triple threat match, like as we know them today, right? Where it's all three guys in the ring at the same time, one fall to a finish. No weird bullshit elimination rules or like tag rules or anything. I know that ECW had done it, but as far as the big two promotions, you really didn't see that model of match, at least on television.
Right. WWF, I know, did several of them in 97, but they were usually dark match main events with like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker or something. Which, why would you want to put that on television?
Right. that was sort of innovative for its time. I almost picked that match, but since you already chosen that Benoit singles match, didn't think we needed to be so redundant there. But I do really like that match. Really cool overall. Really different for its time. I don't know how well it holds up today. Necessarily, it's been a while since I watched it, but I can't imagine it would be flat out disappointing. So anyway, what happens throughout all of this is Raven becomes more and more involved in this U.S. title scene and targeting DDP specifically. So shifting focus from Benoit to DDP, and they settle into more of like a singles feud that becomes really quite personal. And that brings us to my match selection. It is from April 19th in 1998. This was in the Denver Coliseum, and it is the Spring Stampede pay-per-view. Always a favorite of mine. I always enjoyed the Spring Stampede shows. For whatever reason, good like standard of quality, it felt like, that they maintained for all of those.
Cowboy Mark.
I'm a cowboy, cowboy wrestling fan through and through.
Give me that cowboy shit. The Cowboys.
I can't. I just love it. And this is for the United States Heavyweight Championship, Raven challenging Diamond Dallas Page. Now, Raven is challenging. You might wonder, why is he in physical possession of the title belt?
I did wonder that, yes.
And I wondered if they would have a video package recapping this. Unfortunately, they did not. But, Greg, I think you remember. I certainly remember. So, Raven took possession of the belt after he DDT'd DDP during an MTV interview. MTV Live.
This was a big deal at the time.
It was a huge big deal. Yep. And it was like a sit-down interview with DDP. And do you remember the band, Greg?
No, I don't.
That was there. I think, again, I didn't go back and watch this, but I'm 90% sure it was Stuck Mojo. Which
The band that would become Fozzy.
The band that would become Fozzy. Yeah. So you add Chris Jericho to that, and you get Fozzy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the legendary butt rockers that they are today. So yeah, this MTV Live segment, sit down interview with DDP, you know, wrestling's hot, kind of your bog standard wrestling interview when you see that kind of thing in other media, right? And then all of a sudden Raven runs in and like gives DDP this even flow through a coffee table.
Oh shit.
On the set. And I don't know if like they prep the interviewers or what, because they look legit pretty shook.
Yeah.
I hope they didn't. That would be
awesome. And right in front of them, Raven became Judas in their mind.
Yeah, quite so. Well done.
Thank you.
So I mean, if they did know this was gonna happen, these guys did a good job of selling it. For non-wrestling people. So good stuff there.
I agree. It was a great segment, and everybody was talking about it at school.
Everybody was talking
about it, which is my version of Bobby Heenan's everybody's talking about it at the airport.
Yeah.
1998. Everybody was talking about it at school the next day.
Everybody's talking about it in algebra, man.
We were like sitting we would pass notes around algebra class. Oddly enough, I passed notes around all algebra class talking about wrestling.
y'all see what happened to DDP last night. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up because I was confused. And they mentioned MTV Live, but they didn't say any of that, really.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Yeah, it was.
They didn't really go into
it.
So I was like,
I feel like there's a happy medium between like WWE's over-explaining of every storyline and WCW's under-explaining of every storyline.
Right. That's why you guys, happy medium.
That's a very good point. That's such a WCW thing. Like, you get a bunch of mainstream publicity, and it's like, eh, whatever, they know what happened.
Yeah, what's that job, guys? Who cares? Who cares? Who really cares, huh?
We have all night here.
Why is the main event a non-title, unaffiliated match with Randy Savage versus Lex Luger? Because!
Don't worry about it.
The champion wins anyway, yeah. All right, so that's sort of our setup going in here. So that happened, like, a couple weeks before, and Raven's just been holding on to the belt.
Can you answer me this before we get into the match? This feud with DDP and Raven was, I can't remember if this was before this match or after this match. They had some really awesome promos talking about their shared history with Jake the Snake Roberts. Not calling him by name, I think, but just referring to him as the Snake, this mysterious mentor figure. They shared a mentor. And I remember on WCW Saturday Night, Raven cutting this promo, and it's like in this abandoned room, and he's talking about how both of them went through the Snake's training, and both of them know each other like the back of a book or whatever, and then the back of their hand, and then but he ends it with like, you know, we both shared a lot of knowledge, but the Snake gave me the DDT. And I always thought, like, that stuck with me, because I thought that was such a cool point. I was like, oh crap, like, that's why Raven does the DDT. Jake the Snake passed it on to him, and that's why he can do it in matches, and other people hit DDTs, and, you know, it's a false finish.
And which, that, like, bit of mythology just sort of, I was just eating that up, because back in the day, my first run as a wrestling fan, Jake the Snake was my favorite wrestler. So now it's like my new favorite's acknowledging my old fave, and it's just like, oh my god, this is, like, wrestling does not get any better than this. Like,
yeah,
I was so locked in. Yeah.
It was such a great touch.
Yeah, I think that all comes after this, because it gets like a lot more personal before this feud gets blown off. So this match, I have to tell you, I hadn't seen it in a while. I kind of went in blind in picking it, because I didn't want to do the blow off necessarily, because I knew that one pretty well, and I feel like it's pretty well known, and this one just doesn't get talked about as much as just a singles match between DDP and Raven.
I'm glad you picked this one.
I remembered the finish, and that was about it. And I was like, I think that'd be a good representative, but I reserved the right to change my mind. But anyway, I'm glad I stuck to my guns here. Match starts off with Raven attempting to gain the early advantage, Sick Boy grabbing DDP from behind. They're going to go for a double team attack, but that backfires, and DDP just unloads on Raven. Hits a backdrop suplex, swinging neck breaker. Match spills outside the ring. That's when Raven briefly manages to take over. He hits DDP as he's trying to come back into the ring, and we get a cool spot with DDP going for the diamond cutter, and Raven just kind of shoving out of it, which was kind of the classic counter at that time period, but it always popped the crowd. It's like, oh shit, we might see it. Mm-hmm. Because you never knew how he was going to hit that cutter. That was like the gimmick. So that always got people's attention. But Raven bails out, DDP chases him up the ramp, and we get some stagecoach action here.
The best part of Spring Stampede every year. I love whenever they go out there.
You know, maybe that's why I love Spring Stampede so much. It makes such great use of these sets, these elaborate WCW, unique WCW sets.
You knew somebody's going to take a bump into this stuff, and it's going to be good.
Yeah. So we have Raven getting thrown off the stagecoach, not unlike Shawn Michaels in the first Hell in the Cell, of course. DDP jumping off the top of the stagecoach is sort of an awkward spot, but you know, that's what you want to see on Spring Stampede. Some fake fencing getting torn up, some trash cans coming into play.
Tim, predetermined fencing.
Predetermined fencing. Yes.
I don't know. It looked real to me. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Prefab fencing, maybe.
That's 100% wood.
100% well. Watching this gave me 100% wood.
Same.
You beat me to it, Tim.
I have to tell you. There's a really awkward suplex that DDP does on Raven, like through the WCWWrestling.com. Booth, yes. Lee Marshall,
which is called, and I can't remember again who calls it this, but it might have been Tony. But it says through the website,
through the website, yes, through the website,
through the website.
What I love most about that is it was the domain was WCWWrestling.com because presumably somebody was parked on WCW.com.
World Championship Wrestling Wrestling.com.
Yes, exactly.
Candy Wednesday.
Totally. Here's where we get some more hardcore action that you're accustomed to. Raven hitting DDP over the head with a cake pan. And then a cowbell comes into play. More trash can action. And we're getting back to the ring now. Sick Boy still involved here. Holding a kitchen sink at ringside.
Love it.
Puts that right across DDP's back. Fans are super into it here, and they're just sort of trying to will DDP back to life. So they kind of fill in some of the slower spots between moments in this match. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. DDP managed to power up, and he goes for the old Benoit reversal maneuver with that reverse drop toe hold and on Raven, putting him into the chair, or the sink, I should say. Mm-hmm. So, in lieu of the chair, we're getting some creative kitchen sink usage here. In this
the
match.
Drano maneuver, according
the Drano
to
Drano maneuver, yep. Now we're seeing more of the Flock get involved here. This is kind of the story of the match, the Flock trying to help Raven, and often that going awry because Kidman tries to break up a pinfall. What? DDP moves, Raven gets splattered.
I mean, let's be honest, the Flock was not exactly consisting of Mensa scholars there. Not exactly the upper echelon of talents in the industry at the time.
And I mean, you do sort of wonder, like, why wouldn't the Flock, I mean, this is total Ravens rules. The Flock is not barred from ringside, clearly. Why wouldn't they just be involved at all times? Like, anytime they get out of the ring, just completely gang up on DDP, but I mean, I could see that criticism, I guess, but at the same time, they are the Flock. They're kind of directionless,
dumb.
Yeah.
They're just sort of awaiting orders from Raven.
They're like putty from
Power.
Yeah,
this was Raven's part of the match. He didn't need the Flock for this part.
Yeah, and they're just such, let's face it, they're lazy, entitled millennials. Well,
that's exactly right. Generation X and millennials. Yeah. Hammer, I think, was actually a baby boomer.
Well, true. Yeah, he's more of a boomer. Important distinction. So, Sick Boy hits DDP with a crutch, which looked pretty gross. You figure that might finish, but nope, just another near fall. Paige managing to reverse a Raven suplex into more of a like desperation small package. Still not enough to finish.
Nice near fall, though. Really nice.
Nice near fall. Nice near fall. Yep. And you sort of bite on these, like, again, I knew what the finish was going in, but this type of match where you could see just a flash pin ending it. So I kind of like those spots. And the aforementioned Boomer, Hammer, Van Hammer, Heavy Metal Van Hammer, now makes his presence known. But much like his cohorts, this backfires. He accidentally wipes out Raven with the kitchen sink. Now the big man, Reese, the newest acquisition of the Flock, Former Yeti Jin.
Can I just say that Reese, God love him, but Reese is the least intimidating giant in the history of wrestling.
He really is.
He looks so harmless.
He needs the bandages and the wrappings.
That's a good point.
Ever since he thawed out, it's just not been the same.
No, and since Hulk Hogan rebuked his advances after Halloween Havoc 95.
That too. That's got a scar person.
Poor Yeti.
I mean, he does kind of look like a 7-foot tall 10-year-old, I will say.
Yeah, exactly. I thought he's got like a child. He's kind of got like the face of that, of not General Zod, but General Zod's henchman from Superman 2.
Don,
I think was his name. He kind of looks like that guy.
Holy shit. He really does. Wow. I'm never going to be able to look at
Don. He is that guy.
He didn't do anything between Superman 2 and Sold Out 98.
Really? Super Bowl
98. Whatever. Spring Stampede. Whatever the hell.
Well, he managed to be one of the more effective members of the flock here. Because he puts DDP down with that double choke slam. Mm-hmm. Sort of impressive. Another big false finish. Doesn't give Raven the win here. So now we are catching up with Lodi in the crowd. Tosses Raven a stop sign. Signature maneuver there. But Paige is going to steal it. Clean house on all of the flock. Awesome, awesome spot as Kidman comes in. Jumps on Paige's back. But DDP is able to maneuver him into a sweet diamond cutter.
Ooh, I got to be honest. That was my favorite part of the match, man. That diamond cutter was sweet.
Yep.
One of the best.
I feel like Kidman frequently took very innovative, visually stunning diamond cutters like that. But
that was a terrific, terrific diamond cutter. One of the best I've ever seen. It was so smooth. Yeah, just fantastic.
And the camera actually managed to capture it. So that was
yes, it's not a rarity. Yes. Great WCW fashion. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of cameras, we have a grip now running into the match, as Tony calls him. Who is this individual? Well,
it looks like he's about in his mid to late 40s at this point.
Another boomer, yeah. This is going to be a debuting Horace Hogan, in fact.
Oh.
Hulk Hogan's nephew.
I wrote down great value Hootie, but okay.
You know that works.
I'm just saying. That's what was,
Horace, one of the most legendary examples of nepotism in pro wrestling.
Of course, yes.
I mean, at least they did. They do stick him in the flock rather than like shoving him in the NWO right away. True, he does make it to the NWO, but it takes a little while. Kind of a trial by fire.
But this is a good debut for him, really.
Yeah. Hits DDP with the stop sign, and Raven then with the even flow DDT right onto the kitchen sink, literally, gives him the win and officially the United States Heavyweight Championship. I thought this was just a really awesome, fast-paced brawl. You can see like the ECW influence on it throughout, certainly, but worked in a lot more safe style than some of the nonsense you'd see in ECW.
And Tim, am I correct in the video game WCW NWO Revenge? I believe I know for a fact it included stop signs in it, where you could do moves to stop signs based on probably this match and the match the next night on Nitro. But I believe that game also included the kitchen sink as a rare weapon you could pull out as a result of it. I could be wrong on that. It may be a different game I'm thinking of. People out there that are listening, feel free to correct me. But there was some video game that used this match as a an inspiration for the kitchen sink to be used as a weapon in the game.
Was it also in Thunder?
It may have been.
Talked about a million times, I know.
I think
it was one of the weapons you could throw, because there are certain weapons, like, I think you could pick up like a television and throw.
Thunder was such a bad game that I've tried to block it from my memory, but you may be right about that being the game that I'm thinking of here.
Awesomely bad, though.
Yes.
Wore that thing out. Probably recreated this match 1,000 times on Thunder, the video game. Yeah, I was really glad I picked this, and it's got to be Raven's like biggest singles win in WCW.
For sure.
Certainly, now let's face it, rather short lived this title reign, because going into this match, it was previously announced that the winner, whoever emerged with the U.S. Championship, would face Goldberg.
Yeah, what a gift. What a reward.
Yes, and we're talking about mid-streak Goldberg. So right
as
these...
How is this fair? Raven goes through all of this hell to win the United States Championship from a heated rival. Stop signs, kitchen sinks, horses and carriages and whatnot. And the next night, he gets to take on Goldberg?
Not fair.
It's
his lot in life.
I'm guessing that doesn't turn out well for him.
It does not turn out well for him.
Okay. No, I'll have to watch that then.
I almost picked it.
Hell of a fun match, though. Hell of a fun match. Scott Levy, to this day, refers to that match as sort of his masterpiece of layout. He loves the way that match got laid out, even though it maybe wasn't what he wanted it to be, because he would have liked more time. Mm-hmm. But it tells a hell of a story of one dude just being completely unstoppable.
Yeah,
good stuff.
And trying to thwart him, much as you saw in this match with the Flock involvement and all that. But with Goldberg on that path of destruction, it's sort of a prototype for Goldberg's world title win later in the year. I felt like I did rewatch that, and again, I came real close to picking it, but you know me and my DDP love, so here we are.
What I loved about this match was sort of the details that Raven in particular would use, like using the rope and the cowbell a lot, like the way that he drug DDP back to the ring after they wrecked all the sets and the table and the website and everything. You know, he drags him back to the ring by the rope, and then he continues to use the rope. Later in the match, he does a low blow on DDP, but he like shoves his entire arm and shoulder like up between his legs. Like it's a real intimate, like, and then like DDP like holds into that, like that motion. I don't know. It's like a really cool, like, holy shit spot for me. Like, sometimes low blows look fake. That looked entirely real.
He really laid it in.
Yeah, he really did. So just the amazing details by Raven in this, like, super, super hot match. I really, really like this one so much. And that cutter on Kidman was outstanding. Mm. And then the fucking DDT to win it was amazing. I mean, just awesome stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. This match caught me off guard. I didn't remember this match at all. And I mean, I remember that it happened, but I didn't remember what happened in the match. I loved it. This was the biggest surprise to me of this episode, was this match. Not that I didn't expect it to be good. I didn't expect it to be this good. It was really, really good. I actually liked it more than the Benoit match that I picked, having watched them both back to back. Excellent from both guys. I feel like DDP and Raven were like peas in a pod in terms of their... they both had the same kind of philosophy of laying out matches in advance, and it pays off in spades. And it makes me wonder what a Raven versus Randy Savage match would have looked like had we gotten
that.
Ooh.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It is. I'm trying to think, like, would there have ever been an opportunity or a time for them to cross paths? And it's like, with Savage being in the NWO at the time, Raven's also a heel. It's just...
The only time we might have gotten it was when Savage was in the Wolfpack, but his knee was shot at that point.
Yeah.
And he needed surgery, so probably wouldn't have been the best that we could have gotten. But if we could have somehow gotten that, like, mid-97 Wildman Randy Savage versus Raven, that would have been awesome. But it just wasn't meant to be timing-wise.
You're right about that. Something else that occurred to me about this match, this was in April of 1998, and I was thinking about just the structure of the match, and again, how it borrows from ECW, that just...
Yes.
The DNA is all over this match of what you would see in just standard ECW brawls at the time. And then in the WWF, they really take that model to their main event scene, right? With Austin and Foley, mm-hmm. those back-to-back pay-per-views that they worked, where it just goes crazy with the brawling outside the ring and the weapons and all the run-ins.
Using
and,
the set of the pay-per-view as a
using
weapon.
Using the set, yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they just took it to another level, of course. But this is like right before that. Because it was like the April and May WWF pay-per-views, right? That mm-hmm. you saw those main events. So I don't know. It was just sort of the thing to do at the time. And I think it was employed pretty well. Like this stuff to me holds up a lot better than the garbagey actual hardcore division stuff, you know, that you think about in 99, where it's a lot of grab a guy and walk and walk and walk and walk, and then hit him with a cookie sheet and flimsy like trash can, all that crap. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really want to go out of your way to watch, but here I just thought it was much better executed.
Yeah, because they did it like sparingly, like even mm-hmm. with the kitchen sink, you know, like they only did that a few times, you know, and then even the rope and the cowbell's done really well. Everything they did was just, you know, perfectly
there's some
used.
Structure and some psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
Too.
It's
oh yeah,
really,
and,
really
and, cool. And the big unifying theme of every DDP match, similar to his successor Randy Orton, any of the DDP's matches is built around the psychology of when's he going to hit the diamond cutter. Because if he hits the diamond cutter, it's over.
That's right.
That's the end. And so it's very clever that Raven is having to literally throw the kitchen sink at mm-hmm. DDP. Who only needs that one weapon to beat Raven, which is the diamond cutter.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well said. All right. Oh, and just a small detail, but Raven, Greg Phillips, you may have noticed, was repping, I believe it's the Sandman with his shirt out to ECW Sandman.
Not the ECW Comics. Sandman, but the Neil Gaiman Sandman.
Vertigo Comics Sandman.
Yes. The character of Dream in particular. So,
and that's something he would do. He's big comics geek, especially Vertigo stuff, throughout his WCW run, these comics t-shirts.
Yes, he was particularly fond of Sandman shirts and Preacher shirts. He wore those a lot in WCW.
Oh, cool.
He even gives Marvel Knights Daredevil some love, I think, in 99,
yep, in the tag run.
So, anyway, I was very happy with that selection, so... We should note that this feud will conclude the next month at Slamboree. That is in the Bowery death match, which is like a sort of like a last man standing inside a steel cage. And it's like wasn't it more of a Hell in a Cell style cage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got a roof on it, I believe. Yeah.
It's got a roof. They've got some room to actually maneuver. And, I mean, I like that match as the blow off. But I don't know. I'm more familiar with that. I think it's a more famous match. So I wanted to show this one some love, and I'm glad I did. And really cool installment in what was a very, very hot mid-card feud and the spring of WCW's 1998.
All right. Before we talk about my selected match, I want to tell you guys about what is happening right now on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. There's a new episode of Highway to the Impact Zone. That is with Logan and Jake Williams. They are joined by Sean Kidd and Matt Souza, and they're looking at two episodes of Impact from November 26th and December 3rd. So check out the newest episode of that. Jacob also has his newest GWCW reveal episode with Tyler. They're doing numbers 70 through 61. So check out their list. A No With This Ring with Ryan and Cindy. They are watching some of the more memorable and quintessential, there we go, WCW moments, including the greatest match of all time. They did not have nice things to say about that match, and I was editing that show and I almost cut that part out, but I decided to leave it in. But they talk about that match and a bunch of other things. So check out that episode of With This Ring. And then, of course, the Place to Be podcast, The Mothership, had its 573rd episode with This Tuesday in Texas with guest John D'Amato. So check out The Mothership episode as well. Of course, we have the store at tpublic.com. You can go to that website, type in PTBW, and you can buy merch. You can buy your favorite podcast on a t-shirt or a mug or whatever the fuck you want. Do that. It's fun. It's awesome. I have a bunch of
those.
Get
you a talking WCW mug.
Oh, yeah.
We're trying to retire.
Actually, I think we got banned on the store. Talking WCW.
How did we pull that off?
Well, no, something about copyright infringement, logo, something or another. I don't know. So that's limited edition. If you did not score that logo when it was available, then you're screwed. Sorry about it. But the rest are still up there, and they're great. Bunch of stuff. So plenty to choose from. While you're at it, rate, review, and subscribe to all of our feeds. Here we have the PTB Pop Experience with a bunch of pop culture stuff. Tim, you're on some shows over there currently. What can we find from you?
Yeah, well, primarily, I have joined the panel of Pop Goes to the Couch because we have been discussing week to week the Marvel Cinematic Televisual installments here on Disney Plus lately. So we went through the entirety of WandaVision just week to week, shows dropping shortly after the episodes themselves, reviews of that with myself, Scott Shiflett, Sean Kidd, and Andy Atherton as host. So with WandaVision wrapped up, we have moved into Falcon and the Winter Soldier reviews. So we've got that season premiere covered, and we also double shot talked about Zack Snyder's Justice League in its entire 4-hour glory. So if you are wondering, should I watch this, and you haven't watched it and you're not so worried about spoilers, do check that out. We had some perhaps surprising takeaways on that film. But yeah, all the kind of Marvel television content and, you know, the occasional comic book, comics and other media coverage there that we are doing on the Pop Experience.
Awesome. Yeah, I have yet to check out the Snyder Cut, so I'll have to save that for whenever I make it through.
You know, I will just say this much. It doesn't feel like it's 4 hours long. Like,
no,
it's not.
I split it up into three viewings, and
yeah,
spoiler alert for nothing, I guess. But I actually really liked it. against what I expected, I really liked it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll have to do that very soon. Speaking of which, you can also join our Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Look up Place to Be, request an invite, and then join our stuff. We have stuff every day. On that group's pretty fun. Also, check out the placebnation.com website every day. You can find articles like Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And then, of course, if you're shopping on Amazon, you can always click on the banner on our website, and then that will take you to Amazon, and then it helps us out. So please do that. We would appreciate it. Okay, so that brings us to my match. My match is from the same year, of course, fall of 1998, September 13th, at Fall Brawl. We are doing, of course, another Ravens Rules match. Mm-hmm. But in this battle against the Great Saturn, there's a stipulation. If Saturn wins, then Raven must set the flock free. He must be subservient to Raven for the rest of his career, which sounds pretty hot. So, I mean, Either way,
I mean, you brought up homoerotic undertones earlier in this match. In this feud, you can make that argument, certainly.
Also, we will add to that by having Kenyon being handcuffed to ringside for some reason that I hope you guys can explain to me.
Who better to handcuff to the pole than Kenyon?
Okay, so to try to break this down, Saturn is Raven's ex, and Kenyon is Raven's bitchy new boyfriend. And can't seem to let it go. Raven kind of seems over it, but if anything, I feel like it's Kenyon who's been really catty and like keeping this feud with Saturn going, like just poking the bear, you know, just prodding Saturn at every turn. In fact, Saturn and Kenyon had a match earlier in the year. I think it was at Great American Bash. Kind of a low key banger, honestly, for move perverts like us, Jenny. Really enjoy that one. Track that down. If you like what you see from Saturn here and you kind of like Kenyon, good stuff. But yeah, this little feud, in a way, I feel like was an outgrowth of Raven losing that U.S. title to Goldberg the night after Spring Stampede, because Saturn sort of had his hands full with Goldberg at the time. They had a pair of matches, or were going to have a pair of matches. Of course, Saturn came up short, obviously. This is peak win streak Goldberg. Those are pretty good, too. Just saying. So, Raven's kind of pissed at Saturn for, number one, not helping him to retain the U.S. Championship against Goldberg, and also just, you know, for not taking care of Goldberg prior to. And so you saw some friction between the two of them. You also saw Saturn just showing more glimmers of actual character, actual independence. He had like a weird mini feud with Glacier that summer, of all people, over like the usage of the super kick. Like, it's just,
I don't know.
You mean,
it's better than it sounds.
You mean the cryonic kick.
The cryonic kick, which, as I recall, Saturn was extremely dismissive of. He was like, it's a standing sidekick, cryonic kick, my ass. Like, pretty much buries this guy's finish. In one of these, like, shoot-style sit-down interviews. I think it was on, like, a Thunder. So, anyway, you're seeing more actual personality from Saturn now. And, yeah, eventually he is making it clear to people that he is Raven's friend, not his lackey in the flock. And Raven didn't take too kindly to that at all.
Raven doesn't need friends.
No, Raven doesn't need friends. Raven's very used to not having friends. The great promo he cut before that Benoit match earlier, you know, he said it all his life, never had any friends in school. Quote the Raven, nevermore. So yeah, this all leads to a match between the two of them. First at Bash at the Beach in 98, which is pretty good. Raven comes out on top to continue the feud. And that's sort of the story of their summer. It's just the two of them having a pretty intense rivalry. Again, just sort of carrying that WCW mid-card. So you didn't often see this in wrestling, and they didn't often do a good job of having these very complete, very compelling stories in the company's mid-card. But this was one of those exceptions to it. This, if anything, was far better than their main event scene, I would say. Not just in-ring, but story-wise as well. Really solid stuff between the two of them. It all kind of comes to a head here at Fall Brawl. Saturn says, you know, I want one last shot at you, and I want to set the flock free. And there's a segment in the lead up to this. They had a pretty good video package on this show. I don't know if you saw, Jenny.
I did not. No.
For this match. Pretty extended recap of the feud itself. You had Saturn losing a match to, I think, Lodi, due to Flock interference, of course, and having to become Lodi's servant. So you get a lot of good hijinks out of that. He has to do whatever Lodi says. Raven at one point orders Saturn to break somebody in the Flock's fingers. Saturn won't do it. So then he has Canyon break Saturn's fingers, which Saturn just has to stand there and take, basically. Yeah, so it's a pretty physically intense stuff. Saturn then manages to flip that around on a show where Lodi is not in attendance. The Flock, they do not know this, so Saturn goes into business for himself. And he, like, lays out the entire Flock in a bust-up Canyon, gives him a receipt, like, breaks his thumb. That's why his hand is bandaged here in this match. It is fucking awesome. And cuts a pretty good promo where he says, you know, originally I went into this for them. I wanted to set them free, but now I'm doing it for myself. This is about my personal integrity. You know, yes, I do want to set the Flock free, but at the end of the day, I care about me too. So one of those great 90s I choose me moments.
I choose me, of course. Yeah. But, I mean, having said that, how fucking badass is Saturn?
Like, oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, he's amazing.
I am just all in on the Saturn Express.
Me too. Like,
I've always
been
a huge, huge Saturn, WCW Saturn mark.
I'm also coming from my experience with him in the Eliminators in ECW, who I also love. So this is like, it's like a glimpse into the future for me on their stuff. So, of course, they both get on the mic a little bit at first before they start the match, which is different from the other matches that we've seen, which have had pretty hot starts. But Raven says that Saturn has been an embarrassment since the beginning, and tonight begins his indentured servitude. Quote the Raven, nevermore. And then Saturn says, this is all about honor, and you have none. It doesn't matter if I win or lose. I know I will still keep my integrity. So continuing to pick himself, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. Which was like a big deal at the time to see somebody from the Flock just step out on their own like this.
Yeah, I like it. And then somebody like sort of, I mean, just like in my mind, credible in Saturn. Mm-hmm. Like to me, he looks like a better candidate than all these other fuckers.
You know? I will say there was something of a jarring contrast when you go from the mic work of Raven to the mic work of Saturn.
You're right. Sure.
Yep.
That's why he kept it short, right?
Yeah, keep it short, keep it simple. Yeah,
it's fine. Not offensive. Raven gets an early two count. He gets a knee to Saturn's face. Saturn comes back with some punches and a drop kick. Then he gets a beautiful frog splash on Raven.
Yeah, really nice.
While Tanae talks about, which is fun having Tanae in the mix on this commentary, he talks about how adaptable Saturn is in ring, and that's something that I've always noticed about him in his tag team work. So I was super impressed with Tanae for mentioning that. It's really spot on, because from what I know of him, he just seems like he can kind of work with anybody. Like he really does adapt to whatever style they're wrestling.
He was one of the first, not one of the first, I guess, but one of the first prominent in WCW, certainly, hybrid wrestlers. Like a guy, he was a little bit of a high flyer, a little bit of a power guy, a little bit of a brawler, all kind of wrapped into one package.
Right, he makes me think for all that too.
Yeah, he does, and he makes me think that he just borrowed from the playbook of Taz, Human Suplex Machine, and Sabu of all people, with like all the crazy springboard offense. But Saturn actually hit it, unlike Sabu, who botches.
Right, and unlike Taz, he looked like a normal grown sized person. So,
how dare you, sir?
and he sold on occasion. So.
True. Yes. They're really.
He had a lot of influence by Taz and Sabu, so that makes sense.
No doubt.
So they do a punch into the guardrail, and then Saturn hits Raven and Lodi with a suicide dive that looked pretty awesome. Random hardcore moves in this match. Lodi pulls Saturn off the apron into the guardrail, of course. The interference here is legal per or for Raven's rules, of course. And then Lodi starts doing some fairly clever sign holding during this part of the match, referencing Bill Clinton, I think.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's right.
Bill, did you inhale? I think was one of them. And I think there was another Bill reference that I didn't write down, but sort of random in the middle of this blood feud, I guess, with the Bill Clinton stuff.
That was Lodi, just with the very now dated but then contemporary clever references on his signs.
They trade some near falls and then the sleeper hold on Saturn. And then he turns it into a great jawbreaker, hits it pretty hard, pretty good, and then gets a close two on a backslide for Saturn. At this point, Tony just notices Raven's tongue piercing. Just funny. Like, how long has Tony been calling Raven matches and he never noticed that before? Raven keeps trying for the pin and Saturn keeps bridging out in this cool sequence where he's just sort of just kind of desperation sitting on top of Saturn and
the mount segment.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, he keeps bridging out of those several near falls there. And then he does the low blow on Raven to escape that. Raven at this point brings the chair in, does his drop toe hold on Saturn, and then Flock brings the table in and puts it up ringside, sort of distracts Mickey J. And then Kidman comes in to accidentally drop kick Raven in a wild spot. Crowd was nuts for
but
that.
Not an accident. This is
not an accident.
Yeah. Big breakout moment here for Kidman, huh?
I think initially they thought it was an accident and then they were like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah.
And
well,
once
he started barking out, he kind of showed his hand, right?
And how cool for Kidman to get a pop like that, by the way.
Yeah.
Really, really cool moment. And this would kick off quite the run for Billy Kidman. It really made him a star in wrestling.
It really did. This was huge for him. And he was one of those just longtime Flock members who everybody had pegged for. If anyone has singles potential to him, it's a Billy Kidman. And he had so many great cruiserweight matches with like Juventud and Rey Mysterio and people are just kind of waiting for him to go on to more of a singles career. And, man, they do deliver on that one. The rest of the Flock, you know, it's kind of neither here nor there. But, we get some – Kidman has a bright future ahead of him after this.
So that sends the entire Flock chasing after Kidman through the crowd.
Seems to have also kicked his heroin addiction here.
Yes, I was gonna say, good for him.
Not looking quite as grungy, not with the itching that or the scratching, that you know, which was always they coded him as like a heroin addict without being able to say it because it's
yes, and his finishing maneuver, the 7-year itch,
the 7-year itch.
Oh, yes. Lord. So in this time, Saturn hits the Death Valley Driver on Raven and gets the visual pin while the ref is distracted and then gets the kick out at 2. They're both kind of laid out there for a while, and then the crowd starts chanting for Saturn. He gets kind of a little bit on a run. He does a T-bone suplex, the clothesline, and the belly-to-belly on Raven. Then he follows it up and gets a scoop, slam, leg drop for 2. Raven tries the inside cradle for 2. And then Saturn locks in the rings of Saturn. But Lodi pulls him free, of course. Yeah. And then Lodi goes up top, and Saturn hits a low blow on him to knock him down a little bit. Now it's time for the ref to bump again. And ringside, Canyon's going to take that opportunity to get the key from the handcuffs out of the ref's pocket. He unlocks himself, puts a flatliner on Saturn, drags Raven to cover, and then goes back and locks himself back up on the handcuffs, wakes up the ref, and then Saturn kicks Al to a ginormous pop.
Yeah.
This is so awesome. Yeah. I was not expecting that.
At that point, you had out. Before that, you had to think Raven was going to win. After Raven yes. kicked out of the DVD, you think that Raven's going to win this match now, especially with the interference.
He had it won twice with the DVD, then the Rings of Saturn. Canyon comes in with the flatliner. This has to finish, right? And it.
So then Saturn grabs Lodi, does the Death Valley Driver through the table that the Flock had previously set up. Amazing spot. He just hit it so wonderfully. And then
there's an amazing low blow right before that. Too,
yes.
Saturn just nails Raven, and who sells it like he's just been shot.
Yes. And then the Even Flow DDT on Saturn gets two. And then
should have finished, right?
Should have finished. I thought that was it. I honestly did. And then Saturn comes back with the Death Valley Driver to get the fucking win. Like, amazing. Just all of it was completely wonderful. And I didn't even... I had no idea that Saturn was going to win this match. Like, why? Why would I think that he would? And he did. Just beautiful, amazing
and
stuff.
And in winning, he set the Flock free.
He set them free. Oh, my God. What does Raven do from this point? I got to know.
It looks like a fucking world beater.
It's just, it's mind-blowing. Like, I was like, God, now we have to do a Saturn talking to WCW.
Yeah, we might have to.
We kind of blew our wad on it because this is like
did,
the best.
We did.
This is the best he ever looked. I mean,
WCW's mid-card at this point was untouchable. So good. You had, at a given time, in the mid-card to lower mid-card, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Saturn, Raven, Kidman, Hoovy, I mean, Mysterio, so many good characters. I mean, Jericho was doing the best work in that division that anyone had seen. You know, there's so many great characters in their mid-card at this point.
Yeah. And this was the pinnacle of, again, a mid-card storyline success where they really kept their eye on the ball, saw this thing through to a finish, came off beautifully. And this is like, this pay-per-view was like, I remember it was badly reviewed at the time. And I think that its reputation is that it's like legendarily bad. And it's like, I don't know, man, for this match alone, I kind of feel like you get your money's worth no matter what.
Yeah, the main event is legendarily bad. But
yes, the main event is atrocious.
We do get Jericho versus, not Goldberg.
Yes. Yeah. But shit, this, I mean, and the way it's placed too, I think it's kind of about in the middle of the show, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So, I just feel like, holy shit, this was,
yes,
I mean, this is one of my all-time favorite WCW matches. It's
awesome match. Awesome match. You know, it occurs to me, with all of Raven's matches being under Raven's rules, and with our previous subject, Lord Steven Regal's penchant for the Marquis of Queensbury rules, why did WCW never do a Regal versus Raven series where the first match was under Raven's rules, the second match, Marquis of Queensbury rules, and the third match under some sort of other stipulation. Switching back. Yeah, yeah.
Damn.
That would have been a good... And it wasn't like... yes, they were both heels, but WCW would do a heel versus heel match for Raven that same year in October when Raven took on Chris Jericho in a heel versus heel match. So we could have had that Regal series. It would have been interesting.
Regal would have killed that. Like, that would have been amazing.
What a pairing too.
Oh my God.
Oh man. I mean, this match, I know NXT gets a lot of flack for their main events, and there's too many kickouts. It's just, you know, there's no psychology, which I certainly don't buy into that. Yeah, I certainly don't buy into that line of thought myself, but it's there. And this feels like a sort of like a modern day NXT main event, which is, I'm sure, why I love it so much.
Yeah.
Look, I'm a move pervert. I'm a kick out pervert. I don't care. I know what it is, but I thought this was so brilliant. And really, I mean, the story, the end ring, it was all there for me.
Mm-hmm.
Everything clicked.
And it made a star. It made a new star in Saturn.
Yep. Well, ending Kidman, kind of.
Ending Kidman, yeah, it launched Kidman. And you know, and I guess you could even say Canyon. You know, this is where we're seeing Canyon come into his own as a character and a performer in that regard. So, great work. And all of it really owes to how over Raven was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Raven as a character was so over that he created essentially three stars out of that character.
The linchpin of all this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, yeah, the other Flock members went on to do absolutely nothing of note, but still, I think 3 out of 7 or whatever, or 8, is a pretty good freaking batting average in wrestling. I mean, considering how stacked
WCW's roster was,
they ended up creating one of the top 5 cruiserweight stars of WCW and a guy in Saturn who was a big star in the mid-card for some time.
And look, I mean, I know we joke about Horace, but he does join the NWO, like right.
That's true. That's true. I mean, he's one of those that actually, if you recall, throws his support behind Vincent when Vincent tries to become the leader of the Black and White.
Talk about another great mid-card story. Yeah.
What look. I think is funny is that, or interesting, is that Raven's gimmick carries over from ECW to WCW with the whole mind control. And I mean, they didn't necessarily call it the Flock as far as I am watching in ECW, but the idea is there and the premise is there, and how he just molds it and continues to use that entire gimmick is brilliant and amazing to me.
Yeah, he basically redid the whole thing in WCW, just switching it for WCW sensibilities, and it worked.
Because it makes sense. Why would
you have to understand, most people hadn't seen ECW.
Right.
Like, there was no way for somebody, for a kid in Alabama, to watch ECW at that time. Mm-hmm. So it was all new to me. And even though at the time I hated when it was revealed, what was revealed later on about his character, in hindsight, it's brilliant. The classic skit of him and Canyon at the mall. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Raven was a super entertaining character.
When they reveal he's a hypocrite, basically, he was a rich, spoiled rich kid.
Was it Dusty or was it Tony or was it Bobby that points that out in maybe in the DDP match, maybe in the Benoit match? I can't remember. Very early in the Raven run, says that, like, I think it might be Tony that says, oh, I bet he was a spoiled rich kid or something that just got upset along the way. And sure enough, a year later, we find out you were right, Tony.
Tony's always right. What are you talking about?
Those little vignettes they do are really great. Him and Canyon just hanging out at Raven's mom's house, I guess.
Did your head canon make it that the Raven character was Scotty Flamingo? Because mine did.
After that, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that Scotty Flamingo basically went away and made up this whole, you know, whiny character and just was upset that the world wasn't, you know, conforming to his tastes. And when he came back to WCW, he had this whole makeover of the gloom and doom and the horrible upbringing.
I'm not sure if I can reconcile the Johnny Polo character.
No. Johnny Polo would have to be completely different.
He's a different continuity.
And what happened? Did Raven ever coexist in WCW with the amazing French Canadians?
Ooh. You know, that I'm not sure of.
Because it seems like that would be a conversation they'd have to have at some point.
Yeah. Maybe early in Raven's WCW run, 90, that summer 97? I don't know. Could be.
I feel like Raven is one of the hottest guys that we've talked about on our show.
Hottest,
like, just in general, like, as far as the matches that we picked.
Okay, yeah.
And
I thought you were calling him, like, a hot guy.
I mean, like,
I wasn't sure.
You know, I just felt like it was energetic. Like it was mm-hmm. sort of a different vibe from our normal guys. And
that's why I picked him. I wanted to go a different direction. And he's also one of my favorites, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. So I wanted to give him a little bit of a shine. And I have the controversial opinion that his WCW run was his best run in wrestling, even mm-hmm. over ECW. So, I'm a huge marker for Raven.
Need to see more of the ECW run, but I do too, love WCW admittedly. Raven. I really, you know, doesn't it feel to you like he was around for longer in WCW? It's mm-hmm. really just 2 years. Like
2 years, yep. Just exactly. The famous, for those that don't know, the famous story is in mid-99, WCW's kind of really coming across tough times. Eric Bischoff calls a meeting backstage with all of his talent, his disgruntled talent, and says, if anybody wants out, if you want to leave this company, if you're not on our team, you stand up right now and say the word, and I'll release you. And Raven was the first guy that stood up, and
oh boy,
and he was gone. He went back to ECW for a few months, mm-hmm. And then signed with WWE, which led to the famous line allegedly from Vince McMahon in a writer's room meeting: "Who the fuck hired Johnny Polo?"
So, Raven's still alive, is that correct?
Shockingly, yes.
Okay. I thought I knew that, but, you know, yeah. You never
Raven,
know what these
Raven
guys
Raven actually has a podcast, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Called The Raven Effect.
I've never heard that, but... All right, so, anything else to say about Raven before we close it out?
He's just so Raven.
He's... I loved this pick, Greg, and I love doing this episode. It's definitely was a highlight for me, and just easy match picks and easy matches to watch, man. Just mm-hmm.
for sure.
This was a
nice palate cleanser. Just a little bit a totally different style of match than what you got last week or from what we got in the previous episode. We've been all over the map now, truly.
Yeah. And it doesn't really lend itself to some of the characters that usually show up on our show. No, you know. Raven's so not really a
special appearances. Yeah.
Right. Not really one of those guys that you can easily
There's not a lot of stories, you know, not a lot of old road stories like there would be if we did a Wahoo episode, for instance, or a Harley episode.
Got a lot of Wahoo stories, do you?
I got a ton of Wahoo. I don't have them. I mean, my friend Rick Slayer, the legendary.
Oh, of course, obviously, yeah. So
I always wanted to work with Raven. Thought he was a little on the dirty side, though.
In the smell club, maybe. So
well, when I cut my promo with Mean Gene talking about hypnosis and El Dandy, that was inspired by the great vocal work of Raven.
Yo, I always thought that Raven was an overact in our company, dude. I just never thought that he was in the NWO's league, brother.
Ooh.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I guess that leaves us with my pick for our next episode, with the caveat that there will be an episode eventually.
Yeah, well, we should probably address that, right?
Yeah. So now that we've gotten back into a bit of a groove in getting these out, we're going to lose the network as we know it. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, we can figure out some way to continue this. But if not, we will as soon as we can. And on our return episode, the wrestler that we will be featuring by demand on Twitter, and it's the only reason I'm doing this.
Who's demanded this?
Our friend Robert Silva on Twitter has demanded an episode on Lex Luger.
Oh, you are choosing Lex Luger.
I am choosing Lex Luger, and it had to happen. We're leaving people on a cliffhanger because we don't know when we're coming back. So, by God, I had to pick goddamn Lex Luger.
Well, it kind of gives you an out because now if you decide, there ain't no fucking way I'm talking about Lex Luger for 2 hours, we can say, well,
hey,
we
had to motherfucker.
Yeah, we can't, we couldn't do it. We had no way of watching.
Ladies and gentlemen, the total package. And let me tell you, there will be tons of stories about the total package if we do that.
God. Oh my
that
God.
Is a plus. So I am doing this for Robert and for our friend Drew, who also loves Lex Luger so much. He's one of my co-hosts on Jenny and the Gems, and he is obsessed with Luger. So we're doing
total package. I'm Luger, just narcissist. Made in the USA, Lexi Luger. Big fan of his. Good worker. Good size to him. Didn't know how to buy hamburgers on the road.
Couldn't straighten his legs out after taking the door.
All right.
Well, let's hope. You know what? I know we have to end the show, but
yes.
You know what pisses me off about this whole network transition bullshit? Let's is that.
Everything?
The three, yeah, everything. But the three of us, I mean, we're professional podcasters.
Of course.
We can figure something out, right? We can figure out a way to watch whatever matches we want to watch, right? We can figure that out somehow or another. Not to get into all that, but not to tell tales out of school. We will be fine. What makes me mad is that I like this to be a show that people can follow along with as they listen to watch these matches as we talk about them or before or after, can seek them out and have easy accessibility to the things we discuss on this show. And that was and is the beauty of, or was the beauty of the WCW network, easy accessibility and affordability for all people, for everyone.
You just struck upon a great idea. You called it the WCW Network, and I think that's a great idea.
Did I just say WCW?
Holy
yes.
Shit.
They should make it. They should move everything. They should do their little peacock transition, but at least keep the WWE Network as is, as the WCW Network,
yes.
At the very least.
Yes.
Do
it. On board with that.
I'll keep paying.
I don't think I can live in a world where I cannot watch Uncensored 95 on demand. Like, I can't deal
and
with
I
that.
Can't live in a world where I can't fantasy book an 8-man tag team featuring Hard Body Harrison, Hard Work Bobby Walker, and Minute Work.
There you go. Wow. Holy shit. I can't live in a world where I can't rebook Starrcade 1989 on demand.
Why would you
what
want to rebook?
Do? So many wrestling nerds going to go into deep depression, y'all. Like
It really did hit me, honestly.
Me too.
The other
really
day, I was having a real rough week, and I was depressed and lonely, and I turned on my wrestling, and I said, I'm not going to be able to do this in like a month. I'm
going
to have to watch shitty Peacock things with no pause
and
rewind.
No, it sucks.
It's awful. It's awful.
And
an awful
I'm sorry.
Experience.
I mean, like, some people are just like, wait and see, and I have faith, and I just don't. I don't have any of that. I'm officially jaded.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like, how much are they going to, what are they going to stop calling WCW Saturday Night Season 2 of WCW and their stupid bullshit infrastructure anyway?
Yes.
Are they suddenly going to add timestamps? Are they suddenly going to add individual match lists? Like, there's so much that is just not supported, right? It's they can put all the content out there, but it's going to be a very different and I would argue diminished experience, folks.
Well, at least our overseas listeners will be able to continue on the
That's true. Well, on that depressing note, Greg,
a lot of people might be having overseas addresses here soon.
You read my mind, Timothy.
So we might be back sooner than we think.
And we hope that you will still be able to continue on this journey with us, certainly, through whatever means that you find available.
Yes, even if we have to, like, more vividly describe the matches. I mean, that might be on us as podcasters.
Yes, it would give me a chance to finally work in Tony Schiavone, my favorite Tony Schiavone call, the full arm drag and twist.
There you go.
That's what we need, honestly.
Yeah. More play-by-play.
Gregory, do you have anything that you would like to promote?
Let's see. I have my Twitter account, which is, of course, at gphillips8652. I also will be appearing on an episode of DC4U over on the Lillo Podcast Network, in which we'll be talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Mm. And that'll be, I'm recording it this weekend, but I don't know when it will air. And then other than that, what else do I have to promote? Nothing right now. Other than that, yeah, I'm just I'm going to try to enjoy the WWE Network until I absolutely have to drop it. Mm-hmm. And try going back and watching old wrestling. And other than that, just living the life. Hope everybody's enjoying their spring as it begins, I guess. I don't know. What is it? Still winter? I don't know what it is. Mm,
something. Nonetheless, Mania season. That's for sure.
Mania. That's right. WrestleMania season. I am hyped for that, although I can't be there in person. But it's going to be an interesting ride.
It will be. Timothy, what about you?
I would like to promote Scott Hall's drunken appearance on Fall Brawl 1998.
I am watching that right now.
Okay, I'm glad you kept it on, too. That's good. That looked like a good drink, too.
His whole ass said sweet across the back.
Yes.
Sweet!
So, the other wrestling podcast you can hear me on regularly is on Place B Nation Wrestling Network. That it's the show is called PTB NXT. Also with you, Jenny, and with our friend Jacob Williams, chronologically going through NXT Weekly Television. I know. we are in the summer of 2014, in the run-up to the second NXT TakeOver. We'll be reaching that before we know it. Those episodes, by the way, currently unavailable on the cock, but I do have more confidence that that will be a higher priority than perhaps 20-plus-year-old WCW shows. So those will that'll be back sooner than later. We do have sort of a plan in the interim if we do have to.
If we do have to take a hiatus,
the show will continue. Don't worry. In a different form. And the aforementioned on Place B Nation Pop Experience, check out Pop Goes to the Couch, where, again, we talk those MCU shows, baby. I am on Twitter at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8, if you'd like to see things that I liked and tweeted from 6 months ago. You can tweet at me if you like. I will talk to you. I'm not that antisocial. I just don't use it that much.
This plug brought to you by drunk ass Scott Hall. That motherfucker tried to stand up on the corner and about fell down.
Yep.
That was amazing. Okay, anyway, I have a podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. You can find it on all your favorite podcatcher apps. You should probably subscribe to that and listen to it. Lots of great shows over there right now. You can find Bianca's First Time. We watched Billy Madison. That was a thing. And a movie that happened. And
holds up.
No. The newest, you heard about Pluto right now, is me and Tim Slomka watching The Price is Right from the 80s. So that was a tremendous time as well. And soon there will be an episode of Geek and Sassy and The Journey Through Infinity with our newest movie, which is probably something like...
Probably something like Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yes, is probably where we're at on that
one. Two.
It's not Guardians 1.
We already talked about
something
first.
Like that.
Yes, something like that. You can follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position. I have shows on the North South Connection podcast feed as well with TNA Never Dies and the Extreme Three Way Dance, which we talk a lot about Raven in 1995 and 1996. So if you want to hear any of that stuff, please listen to that show. It's amazing. And that's it. Thank you, guys.
Have a good one, y'all. Okay, I'm going to read this. This isn't going to take long. With deepest regrets and tears that are soaked, I'm sorry to hear that your dad finally croaked. He lived a full life on his own terms. Soon he'll be buried and eaten by worms. But if I could have a son as stupid as you, I'd have wished for cancer so I would die too. So be brave and be strong. Get your life on track. Because the old bastard's dead and he ain't never coming back.
Fuck.
And then he drags him on a casket. Oh, the best time. Best time.
That's going to be our hidden track right there.